Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
It's Gary Parrish. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, leaky black. The Eye on College Basketball Podcast is presented by Jersey Mike's. Jersey Mike's, a sub above. Kyle Boone is here with me. If you're watching on YouTube, smash the like button like you're Brandon Davies. You have consent while you're here. Please, if you haven't done it already, subscribe to the CBS Sports College Basketball YouTube channel. Let's get into it. Obviously, we're going to get to Alabama Clemson in just a bit, but we have to start in Boston, where UConn absolutely humiliated Illinois in the title game of the East Region. Final score, UConn 77, Illinois 52. Believe it or not, the score was tied 23-23 with 84 seconds left in the first half. And then UConn did something you don't see every day, and that something was go on a 30-0 run over a span of 8 minutes, 8 seconds of game time, 30-0. The score went from 23-23 with 84 seconds left in the first half to 53-23 with 13-16 left in the game. Absolutely incredible. So Dan Hurley's Huskies are in the Final Four for the second straight year. Strong jaw on a scale of 1 to WTF. How would you rate UConn's performance against Illinois?
Capital WTF. That was incredible. UConn looked amazing, and it's kind of what we've come to expect from UConn. They started the game on a 9-0 run in the first half, started the second half on a 25-0 run, part of a 30-0 run. Norlander was obviously there in Boston, and in his story he wrote, from the 123 mark in the first half to the 13-17 mark in the second half, it went from 23-23, was a tied basketball game, to 53-23. And that can happen sometimes in big games, can happen in an NCAA tournament game. That very rarely happens in an Elite Eight game. It very rarely happens to a team of Illinois' caliber. And this UConn team, man, they're just on another level right now. I thought it was funny after the game, Brad Underwood, obviously the Illinois coach, said just a few days ago, basically, you know, how do you prepare for UConn? It's like, just paraphrasing here, but basically, like, you know, there's nothing that UConn's going to throw at us that we really haven't seen. And then after the game, it was like, whoa, I didn't really expect that. So I thought it was pretty self-aware moment from Brad Underwood, whose team just got run out of the building. This is a fantastic UConn team. Did not think they had this in them. What a game from the Huskies.
I mean, I thought Illinois would be competitive with them. Like, I even said this in studio tonight. I was like, I'm not going to say it on air because I don't need my mentions getting all messed up later on tonight when UConn wins by 30. But I won't be surprised if Terrence Shannon figures out a way to keep Illinois in this basketball game.
Yeah.
And he just didn't. And by the way, he was terrible. He's been on an incredible NCAA tournament run. In fact, an incredible run going all the way back to the beginning of the Big Ten tournament. Terrence Shannon had been averaging above 30 points per game. And then against UConn, he took 12 shots, missed 10 of them, finished with 8 points, 3 assists, 2 rebounds. He had more fouls than he had made shots. And the 30-0 run, I'm sure you saw this. Norlander tweeted it. Others did as well. It was clearly circulating in the arena. The last time UConn had a 30-0 run in a game of any kind was 1990. And it was against New Hampshire. Like, think about all the games and all the stuff UConn has won since 1990. And they had never done anything like what they did tonight to the Big Ten tournament. Like, what are we doing? I mean, they did this to a team that has been absolutely rocking and rolling. They did this to a team that's got the best offense in the country outside of UConn's offense. Think about that for a second. UConn's got the best offense in the country now. Illinois entered the game second. And the second best offensive team in the country shot 25.4% from the field against UConn and was 6 of 23 from 3, 26.1%. So here's what Illinois was up against tonight. They're playing the best offensive team in the country, and they couldn't do anything with them on offense. Like, they couldn't score on them. You're playing the best offensive team in the country, and you can't score on them. What? I mean, it's just – there's a reason why UConn is now a heavy favorite to win the national championship. Yeah. Like, that, the last number I saw was minus 210. Like, that's massive. Purdue is second at plus 390. They've won, they've led every game in this NCAA tournament by at least 30 points. In every game so far, they've been up by at least 30 at some point. So they're just as overwhelming as everybody tells you, just as awesome as everybody tells you. And I know this has sort of been the, like, little toss-up question everybody's having fun with on TV and podcast over the past week or two. Like, is this team actually better than last season's team? Last season's team, at the end of it, when they got through destroying everybody, finished 3rd and 7th in adjusted offensive efficiency and adjusted defensive efficiency. Number 3 in offense, number 7 in defense. Right now, they're number 1 in offense and number 4 in defense. I mean, what are we talking about? I'm not crowning them yet, but I understand.
Yeah, right.
I understand why other people are. I mean, I get it. I'm going to continue to pick Purdue just because I'm 60% Boilermaker, and I'm going to go down kicking and screaming. But, like, if every time I say I still think Purdue's going to win the national championship, if you go, God, that's an idiot, what is he watching? I totally understand. Although I should point out, Purdue is beating everybody's brains in too in this NCAA tournament, but they got one more game to go before, they can get to the Final Four.
Yeah, just a couple quick nuggets for you from this UConn game. UConn had more assists, 21 in this game, than Illinois had made baskets. That was 17. UConn scored as many points in the paint, 52. As Illinois scored in this game, 52 points. Terrence Shannon finished 2 of 12 shooting for 8 points, had just 2 points in the first half. It was pretty much over after that. Did you catch Dan Hurley after the game talking about drawing some motivation from Sean Harrington?
I did not see that, no.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah, so Dan Hurley infamously gets motivation from pretty much anywhere, whether it matters or not. And Sean Harrington, former Illinois player, played there for 4 years. He averaged a whopping 5.7 points per game in 4 seasons. Sean Harrington earlier this week tweeted, that UConn had not played this physical of a team, never seen someone like Terrence Shannon. And Hurley, basically said, like, my coaches gave it to me as kind of fuel for the fire coming into this game. And He called the statements, quote, asinine. So perfectly on brand for Dan Hurley, who, again, just like, you know, he can draw motivation from anything.
Oh, it's so good. It's Michael Jordan like, in the sense that you're just finding disrespect in any little place you can find it, even if it doesn't matter where it's coming from. Like, why does anybody in the world, I say this respectfully, all right? And I recognize that every time you say, what I'm about to say, I say respectfully, you're about to say something disrespectful. I get it. I understand. But I do say this as respectfully as I can say it. Why would anybody care what Sean Harrington says about anything, right? Like, the whole world is out there screaming, Dan Hurley's amazing and UConn is amazing. And the only thing he hears is that, right? Yeah. It's like if you write a column and 100 people, like, just, you know, on scale, but like 100 people say, that's the best column I've ever read. And then one person says, that's an embarrassment. I don't know how you published that. You should delete it right now. And the only thing you're caught up on is this one person who doesn't matter, broadly speaking, having a counter opinion to what everybody else in the world has. And that's what you're caught up on. That's what Dan does. And like, it's how you can make yourself crazy, but it's also what makes him brilliant. It's also what makes him great. It is what makes him, by the way, we're going to get to this point too. If they finish this thing off, it's been settled for a few years now. Like, everybody's just like, who's the best coach in college basketball? Oh, Bill Self. I'll go Bill Self. And then you start the conversation after that. Like, Dan Hurley's coming for that. Like, if we do the candid coaches thing this summer and UConn's coming off back-to-back titles, I won't be surprised if we ask that question. Dan Hurley's the leading vote getter.
Yeah. I mean, he's got to be. I actually chatted up with Kyle Porter here in Dallas this evening. He asked me who you would start a program with if you could pick any coach in college basketball. And I kind of, you know, thought about it. I actually mentioned briefly Bill Self, but I mean, Dan Hurley has to be number one, right?
I think so at this point, because you just look at what he's doing in these past couple of years with not entirely different teams, but largely with different teams. Yeah. And this isn't the byproduct. Like, if Duke ends up in the Final Four, it's pretty obvious how that happened. And you don't want to take away anything from that staff and the development and the teaching and the coaching. But if Duke makes the Final Four, you know why? Because they recruited like a Final Four caliber roster, and then it became a Final Four team. That's not what UConn's done. I mean, Tristan Newton, Cam Spencer, these are just guys that he has brought together, and calling them just guys might be discounting them a little too much. They're obviously incredible basketball players, but like UConn does have five-star players, but it's not built the way a Kentucky team is built or a Duke team is built, or even the way most blue blood programs are built. It's just what is the common denominator between the greatness from last year and the greatness of this season? It's the guy running the whole thing. And, right. And yeah, I mean, I think Kyle Porter is probably right. If you had to pick a guy right now to start a program, it's probably the guy running the one in at UConn right now.
Yeah. And I would add, just as a loose end from this game that I thought was funny, during an in-game interview, Brad Underwood was kind of asked like about Donovan Clingan, because he was dominant defensively. And Underwood, you know, with an interview with, I think it was Andy Katz on TBS, said, you know, if Clingan blocks 100, he blocks 100. Illinois finished 8 of 30 on layups in this game. Donovan Clingan finished with 5 blocks. I can't, countless other altered shots. Just the all-time, that's a bold strategy, Cotton. We'll see if it pays off. And it just absolutely blew up in Illinois' face. I thought it was hilarious.
Well, what did you think the mindset was? Because like everybody with a Twitter account was saying, why do they keep attacking Clingan? Now, Brad Underwood's not a dumb basketball coach. So there's some thought that it was like, we've got to get him out of the game. And the only way to get him out of the game is attack him and hope that he fouls us. And that just didn't work. But that seemed to be on some level the strategy.
I think that had to have been the strategy, which is UConn looks devastating and unbeatable whenever Donovan Clingan is in the lineup. Defensively, his impact is amazing. Offensively, he's super efficient. He's a great rebounder, does everything on both ends for this Huskies team. But when he gets into foul trouble, this UConn team looks like very, very, very good, but maybe not elite. So maybe they just thought, hey, we'll just go at Donovan Klingon 50 times and see if we can get him into foul trouble and stick him on the bench, and he plays 10 minutes each half. That would be a win. That was not the case. Klingon was awesome. This, I think, was his best game of the NCAA tournament. Defensively, he was all over the place, and he was the best player on the floor in this game.
Not to get ahead of ourselves, obviously, but if we get to, you know, a week from Monday and we are watching a UConn-Purdue national championship game, I'm not predicting anything. I'm just saying if the key to – forget beating UConn, but playing with UConn. If the key to playing with UConn is to get Donovan Klingon in foul trouble and get him off the court, like that's the first step. You just got to get him off the court. Well, then maybe Purdue's got the one guy who could do it.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, that's at least something that makes that interesting. UConn looks as close to unbeatable as we can remember a college basketball team looking recently. I guess you'd probably have to go back to like 2015 Kentucky before they got caught. It looked like they might not get caught. And obviously Connecticut has lost this season three times, but all in true road environments, which they're not dealing with anymore. In fact, so far in this NCAA tournament, they've had something close to home environments. So they look as close to unbeatable as anything we've seen recently. But one variable that could theoretically cause issues in a championship game against Purdue is that, you know, Purdue's got if Donovan Klingon's the second best center in America, and he might be, I don't know, I'll let other people debate that. Well, then the guy on the other side would be the best. Right. And that would be obviously be a fascinating matchup. But again, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's circle back to this one. Klingon, just to put some numbers on it, 13 shots, made 9 of them, 22 points, 10 rebounds, 5 blocks, 3 steals. My Memphis Grizzlies need a center, and my Memphis Grizzlies are going to have a top 10 pick.
There you go.
I'm just saying. Well, like, let me ask you this, and now we're getting a little off track, but the counter argument to somebody like the Grizzlies using a top 10 pick on Klingon would be, yeah, but you're with John Morant, Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson Jr., you're trying to compete in the Western Conference playoffs. Can you do that with a rookie center? So that would be the question. Like, if you're trying to push next season, can you do it with a rookie center? I don't know, but he looks great. And he was clearly the difference maker and most important player in UConn's blowout of Illinois in the Elite Eight. So now we're going to get UConn against Alabama on Saturday in Arizona. And that's because Alabama, in the second game on Saturday night, beat Clemson in a competition that was much more competitive than the first one we watched. We'll spend some time on that next, but first a word from our partners.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
So on Saturday down in Arizona, UConn's going to play Alabama in the Final Four, and that's because Alabama beat Clemson in Los Angeles Saturday night in the title game of the West Region. Final score, Alabama 89, Clemson 82. Clemson tied in the Final Four for the first time in school history. Strong John, back when Alabama was a 6-5 to start the season, did you have any idea you were watching a program that would, just a few months later, be in the Final Four for the first time in history?
Yeah, I never stopped believing. Obviously, I think when they moved to 6-5, I called it. I thought they would be a Final Four team. No, absolutely not. And even coming into the NCAA tournament, I think Alabama's volatility, just because of offensively they're great, defensively, Nate Oates will even admit they don't really guard anyone. I really thought that they were a candidate to be bounced pretty early in this tournament, but they're headed to their first Final Four in program history. Fittingly, in the exact on-brand way, they made 16 three-pointers in this game, shot 36 of them. Mark Sears, again, fittingly, was awesome in this game, 23 points. Clemson missed a billion free throws in this game and ended up 3 of 11 from free throw range in the second half, 8 of 16 for this game. But yeah, this was unexpected, I think, from Bama, just big picture. Did not expect Bama to make the Final Four, but yeah, this was a good matchup for Alabama, obviously, against a Clemson team that's been pretty hot, been slightly lucky with some three-point range, some variance. Coming back against them in this one, Alabama was hot from three, and they're moving on to the Final Four.
Yeah, I mean, 16 to 36 from three, I mean, forget about it. You're probably done. I mean, what's amazing given that number is that it was a one-possession game with less than two to play.
Yeah.
Right? PJ Hall fouled out. Picked up his fourth with about 8 minutes. Let's stop there for a second. 8 minutes left, picked up his fourth. Brad Brunell kept him in the game. Mm-hmm. He eventually fouled out with, I think, 3:30 left, and it was an eight-point game. I know some people were questioning that. I didn't mind it. Like, you know, it's 8 minutes to – this is probably – I don't want to say probably, but it's possibly as close to a Final Four as Brad Brunell and Clemson will get. Just why not ride your guy and just see what happens? And like, even after PJ fouled out, they still got it to a one possession game. I didn't mind him letting him play.
Absolutely not. No, I always feel like coaches are generally way too conservative when it comes to players getting into foul trouble.
Me too.
They're always, you know, two quick fouls 5 minutes into a game. It feels like just an automatic hook, which is incredibly stupid. Players actually fouling out is not very common. And so in this situation, yeah, with Clemson and potential Final Four berth on the line, you need your best player in the game. Absolutely made sense for PJ Hall to ride it out. He ends up fouling out. That's going to happen sometimes. But yeah, I had no problem at all with Brad Brunell playing it the way he did.
Yeah. Like, I don't think they lost because Brad kept PJ in the game. And I don't think they lost because PJ fouled out with 3:30 left. You know why they lost? Because Alabama went 16 of 36 from three. And we talked about this on CBS Sports Network. I was in studio earlier today. And one of the points I made, because, you know, we got 2 hours to fill. And we're, you know, there's only two games. There's a lot of talking. Oh, buddy, we're really talking. So
your voice is hurting, I can tell.
One of the points, we just couldn't wait to go to press conferences. Do we have another press conference starting? All right, let's get out to Purdue, Matt Painter live at the podium. Couldn't wait for those. So one of the things I said was, you know, typically when you're previewing a game, it's like, what's the key to the game? And it's like, well, if Clemson does this, then that's how they could win this game. And if Alabama does this, well, that's how they could win the game. Like, that's a pretty normal television thing. All right, Clemson, Alabama, coming up tonight. What's the key to the game for the Tigers, GP? Like, you know. And I said, I wasn't asked that directly, but we were just discussing this game, and I said, I really do think this game is determined by Alabama, period. Alabama decides this game. Because with Alabama, and I've said this a thousand times, you know what they're going to do. Like, they want to take about half their shots from three. And if they make a good percentage of them, you're going to have a hard time winning, regardless of how you're playing. Like, you could be playing well, too. But if they're going, like, if they're going to take 33s and make 40% of them, you got big problems. Well, tonight they took 36 and they made 44.4% of them. They scored, they had 16 threes. Clemson only got eight. They got twice as many points from the three-point line as Clemson did. This is just a math problem. So the thing I said was, I know how many threes Alabama's going to take. I mean, I can't give you the exact number, but they want it to be about half their shots. Tonight it was more than half. And if they shoot 40% from that, then you can't beat them. I'm not saying nobody could beat them. I will not say this in the national semifinals. Like, if Alabama, shoots 40% for three, they won't lose, because then like Connecticut can still beat them by 20,000, right? That's just the way it works. But with Clemson, I thought if Alabama plays well offensively, Alabama will not lose. And they played well offensively, and they did not lose. And frankly, Clemson played pretty well offensively too. Shot nearly 50% from the field. But when Alabama's going to bomb, like when they're getting, 48 points from the three-point line, and you're getting 24, it's a math problem. And Clemson ran into the same math problem that people have been running into against Alabama really since Nate Oates has established his culture and his style and committed to it.
Yeah, and I would add, too, Norlander and I, a couple years ago, wrote a little bit about Oates and kind of his embrace of analytics. They hired a firm to basically go in and savvy up their system. So they look at the types of shots they're taking. They definitely prioritize threes and layups. And if you go look at their shot chart, it's a lot of threes and it's a lot of layups, and it's not very many mid-range shots. And Nate Oates earlier the season was actually showed like a shot chart. Here's what your shot chart looked like after a game. And it was all threes, all layups, and then one long two with the toe on the line, on the three-point line. And he said, that's exactly what I want it to look like, except for the long two. And so, this is exactly how Alabama has kind of prepared itself the last few years under Nate Oates, shooting 36 threes in this game. Not at all a fluke, not a surprise. They like to play this way. It's somewhat of a high variance style, but yeah, against Alabama, that it really is, I think, what gives them at least a puncher's chance to make that an interesting game.
Yeah, like they're dangerous. UConn's better than them, obviously. And if they're not making shots, though Alabama has guarded better in this tournament than they guarded throughout the season, they still don't guard well. I mean, Clemson just shot 48% against them. So I think you've labeled it correctly. If Alabama does something like 16 of 36 from three again, as crazy as it sounds, I am not here to guarantee you that wins the game.
No, I agree.
And it should, but I don't know if it does. But the only way Alabama has a chance, I'm not even saying the only way Alabama wins, I'm just saying the only way Alabama has a chance to stay in the game is they've got to really shoot it well from the perimeter, because there's no other obvious way for them to hang around.
I don't know. What you think? Nate Oates is probably watching the Illinois tape and thinking, hey, we just attacked Donovan Klingon. Maybe maybe we can take down the Huskies.
I think he's going to try to get up 45 threes. I think like, we'll see what happens next Saturday. And frankly, I think the opening line's double digits. I mean, we got a Final Four game. Opening line's going to be double digits. And the money's still probably going to come in on UConn.
Yeah, that seems right.
Because they're killing everybody. So we'll see what happens next Saturday. And I don't want to say it doesn't matter, because of course it matters. But like, no matter what happens next Saturday, Nate Oates has taken this program to the Final Four for the first time in school history. And these last 2 years, I think sometimes people forget this, because, that the last season at Alabama was in some ways overshadowed by tragedy and crime, but in other ways overshadowed by the fact that, they didn't go as far in the tournament as you would think the number one overall seed in the tournament should. But they were the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament last season.
Yep.
And now they're in the Final Four this season. Like, that's a probably not as good of a run as the two-year Dan Hurley run, but it's up there pretty good. And they lost seven of their top nine from last season. Yep. Seven of their top nine, including Brandon Miller. Of the top nine scores from last season, they bring back Mark Sears and Rylan Griffin. That's it. They started 6-5 with only two of their top nine back. Now, the schedule was tough. You go back and look at the five losses, it's like, okay, they lost to five good teams. I think they were all top 50 KenPom teams. But still, they lost seven of their top nine scores from last season's team and then started 6-5. And now they're 19-6, I guess, in their past 25, something like that. Mm-hmm. And now Nate Oates threw 5 years at Alabama, and we're not through 5 years, but this is year five. Two SEC regular season titles, two SEC tournament titles, three Sweet 16s, an Elite Eight, a Final Four, a number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament, and again, a trip to the Final Four this season. It's not bad for a dude who was coaching high school basketball 11 years ago, for a guy who was an assistant at Buffalo less than a decade ago.
Yeah, it's wild. It's wild. This dude has risen up and risen up quickly.
Oh, what a weekend for that. I think that's Matthew 28:6.
There you go. Thank you.
I think it's Matthew 28:6. I've been trying. My kids now go to a school where they make you learn scripture. So I've been focused in on Matthew 28:6 this week.
Nate Oates has risen.
Matthew, that's right. 20. It's a big weekend for Nate Oates. It's kind of like a modern day. I don't even think I should say it.
Big weekend for folks who have risen. Absolutely.
It's a big weekend for folks who have risen. And Easter bunnies. It's a big weekend for bunnies and folks who have risen. You know?
It's fair. Good on.
How about this for a connection? So, Bobby Hurley worked for Dan Hurley at Wagner. Then Nate Oates worked for Bobby Hurley at Buffalo. And now Dan Hurley and Nate Oates are going to coach against each other in the Final Four. Also interesting, when Nate Oates leaves for Alabama, or no, when Bobby Hurley leaves for Arizona State.
Yep.
And they've got to decide who to promote or who to hire to replace him. The athletic director at the time was Danny White. That's who promoted Nate Oates. Danny White, now the athletic director at Tennessee, is one win away over Purdue, if they can get it, from joining Nate Oates and Dan Hurley in the Final Four. There's a lot of Buffalo connection and Hurley connection stuff in there.
God, a lot of Buffalo.
Shouts to Buffalo.
Shouts to Buffalo.
It's a real big weekend for folks who have risen. When you think about it.
Absolutely.
If I put the number right now at 12, UConn, Alabama next Saturday, would you feel comfortable taking Alabama?
No.
That's the thing. I'm so tired of saying out loud, I think this team can maybe challenge UConn, and then just watching them get run completely off the floor. Like, I just keep saying it over and over again. It never happens, except for that one time at Creighton, I guess. There was that one time where I was right. Every other time, I just sound ridiculous because they think.
On the road at Creighton, yes. That was the one time. No one's beating this UConn team.
I'm still not ready to say that, but I understand why people keep saying it. I get it. I'm watching the same stuff you guys are watching. I get it. I just still. They look unbeatable. I'm just always hesitant to call a college basketball team unbeatable. Like, we called UNLV unbeatable one time, you know, and that didn't work out so well. And we called Kentucky unbeatable at one point. That didn't work out so well. So I'm just always hesitant to go there. But I'm not arguing with anybody. Like, if you want to go there, I'm not going to sit there and pick a fight with you about it. You can tweet it at me, and I'm not going to reply. I get it. It's just that we have gone down this path where we call teams unbeatable before, and then you look up and, you know, they lost.
So yeah, that's absolutely right. 2015 Kentucky, I think, was the perfect comparison because no one thought that team was going to lose. No one, even during the NCAA tournament, thought they were going to lose. And then they lost the final game of the year. Like, so that, I mean, that can't happen. Just the way that UConn is playing right now. And maybe it's just a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction from how they performed tonight. But yeah, it feels... at this point, pretty unlikely that UConn's going to
finals. that will obviously determine the other two participants at the 2024 Final Four at 2:20 Eastern on CBS. It's America's most watched network, Network of Stars. It's the one seed Purdue against the two seed Tennessee. Let's stop here. Purdue, 3.5-point favorite, total 147.5. I know earlier we were talking about a hypothetical Purdue-UConn matchup in the national championship game, but we were simply talking about that from the context of, like, what kind of team could possibly get Donovan Klingon in foul trouble. And, right, like, a team with Zach Edey, at least on paper, is the type of team that maybe, I emphasize the word maybe, could cause those types of problems. But Purdue's got to win two games to even get to that point. And the first one is against Tennessee. And though I think Purdue is better, and though these teams have already played and Purdue won the game, it's not crazy for me to imagine Tennessee keeping this thing tight and actually winning it. Like, Tennessee is physical. Tennessee is old. Tennessee is great defensively. And Tennessee has a guy in Dalton Connect who's a vastly different player than, say, Mark Sears at Alabama, but very similar in the sense that, like, Mark Sears can go win Alabama a basketball game. And I think Dalton Connect can go win Tennessee a basketball game. Maybe not this one, but if he's the type of perimeter-oriented player that has made huge impacts in this tournament for decades, like the type of guy who you say, we're at the under four, we're tied, a trip to the Final Four is at stake, we're going to set you some ball screens, go win this for us. Like, there's a handful of guys in this tournament that can do that, and Tennessee's got one. And Tennessee hasn't normally had one. Rick has had some great teams at UT, but he's never had a shot creator and a shot maker like this. And if we're sitting here on Sunday night talking about Tennessee just upset Purdue to go to the Final Four for the first time in school history, and we got two SEC programs in the Final Four for the first time in school history, I imagine Dalton Connect would have a big role in that. I'm not predicting it. Obviously, I'm 60% Boilermaker. But Tennessee, when we talk about Purdue, how awesome it would be to get Purdue-UConn, trust me when I tell you, nobody is assuming that Purdue's just, like, should go ahead and be advanced in there. You're going to have to beat, obviously, two good teams to get to the championship game, and this Tennessee team is quite literally one of the best teams in the country.
Yeah, Tennessee, I think you perfectly explained it. Very physical, very good defense, and this Tennessee team has had a really good defense for a really long time under Rick Barnes, but the offense has really stepped up a notch this year, and that is because Dalton Connect, he's kind of that missing piece that they really have not had the last few years, and really has elevated this offense to a new level where if they need a shot, they say, hey, go give me a bucket. They haven't had someone like that. You know, the physicality for this Tennessee team against this Purdue team, I think, is going to be interesting. They played each other, obviously, earlier this season. Purdue won that game. It was a 4-point game. It was pretty close. I still think Purdue has improved significantly since they played, but I think Tennessee's improved pretty significantly as well. They're one game away from making the Final Four. So I guess we'll see what this matchup looks like. Obviously, the way Edie's playing right now and the way this backcourt is playing for Purdue, they're shooting it at a really high level. It's going to be a tough matchup for Tennessee. It's not likely that Tennessee wins this game, but you look at the betting odds. Tennessee is a 2.5-point underdog. It should be a close game. The betting market suggests it's going to be a close game, and on paper, you kind of match these teams up. It looks like it's gonna be a close game, so I'm excited about it.
I think it'll be tight. Purdue, yeah. I'm taking the Boilermakers. Are you taking Purdue to advance as well?
Yeah. Tonight, I'm a Boilermaker.
All right, we're both Boilermakers. 5:05 Eastern on Sunday. Also on CBS, America's Most Watched Network, Network of Stars. This is the surprising one. Yeah. Not surprising that Duke is here, but NC State as an 11 seed, this wasn't supposed to happen. Obviously, this is a massive, massive matchup in Raleigh. I saw some folks there who I respect. And actually, I would like to bring Nada in on this because he would have a better context for what we're discussing. Nada, if you open your mic, I've seen Nada, of course, lives in the great state of North Carolina. I've seen some people from Carolina say, you outsiders don't quite understand. Duke, North Carolina would be the massive national Elite Eight game. But locally, Duke, NC State is kind of bigger. Nada, does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does, because you have to understand, most Duke fans do not live in the state of North Carolina.
Right.
There are more NC State fans than there are Duke fans in the state of North Carolina. And considering that North Carolina State Wolfpack fans feel like the lower class fan and are treated like the redheaded stepchild of college basketball fandom, this is a big thing. And also, they have a massive inferiority complex. Yeah. So you're dealing with a lot when we talk about the North Carolina State Wolfpack.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No. So largely, this is a very big deal. And you're going to have generations of fans who have felt like it's basically not been their year, decade, millennium, your choice, that are going to be rooting to see NC State in this Final Four for a whole bunch of reasons.
You know, like, I don't root against anybody ever. Like, I love John Shire, but like, I do think there's something kind of neat about watching NC State upset Duke to go to the Final Four. Like, that's kind of a neat story, particularly given how they got here. Maybe older NC State fans would remember this, but I wrote a column a million years ago, back when I was younger and I think dumber. It's not the column I would write today, if only because I don't even dabble in the pop culture stuff that I used to try to dabble in. Like, there was a time where, like, Bill Simmons was the most famous and popular sports columnist. And so then, like, a bunch of younger people, like, was like, well, I guess if you throw in a pop culture reference and a pop culture reference, then you're Bill Simmons. And it was all stupid. But I wrote a column one time comparing NC State to Khloe Kardashian. I was like, listen, if you didn't know anything about her, if you didn't know she had sisters, like, you'd be like, man, Khloe Kardashian, that's great. But Khloe Kardashian is constantly, like, compared to Kim Kardashian. And at the time, I guess I was saying Kourtney Kardashian. I could throw in Kendall and Kylie now, but I think at the time they were like kids and that would have been creepy. but I could probably add them now, you know? And I was like, so, like, when you're constantly walking into the room with Kim and Kourtney, that's tough. Even if independent of them, you're kind of doing all right. And NC State fans didn't like that column at all.
I can't imagine.
But it's accurate.
It's like you're a pretty good program, but you're standing next to blue bloods. You're a good basketball program, but you're standing next to blue bloods every time, all day long. So you're constantly getting compared to them. And like, I remember, like, NC State fans, when they fired Herb or pushed Herb out or whatever, happened. And they were like, but if you look at Herb's record, Herb Sendek, of course, if you look at Herb's record against Duke and North Carolina, well, then, like, what do you think of that, GP? I was like, look at anybody's record against Duke and North Carolina. Everybody loses to them. But because you're so close in proximity, you are judged against them, just like Khloe is judged against Kim and Kourtney. It's a tough life to live. So all these years later, I wouldn't mind seeing Khloe come out on top. I guess that's what I'm saying. I wouldn't mind seeing Khloe. Nothing against Kim, as long as we're calling Kim Duke. Nothing against Kim. I like Skims. But it's something kind of funny about watching Khloe come out on top, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, to appease the NC State fans here, they lost 7 of their last 9 regular season games. This was a team that was written off. Like, they finished 9-11 in ACC play. They go on to win 5 games in 5 days in the ACC tournament. They've won 3 games in the NCAA tournament. They've won 8 consecutive games in what have effectively been elimination games. They lose and their season is over.
Yeah.
They lose at any point in the ACC tournament and don't get the automatic berth from the ACC tournament title. Their season is over. They're not going to be an NCAA tournament team. And obviously, lose to go home in the NCAA tournament. So what they have done as an 11 seed is absolutely fabulous. You know, you can debate the merits of which Kardashian they should be, but they look beautiful to me, GP.
Yeah.
I like them.
I like them too. And what's interesting is that whichever team doesn't win this game is going to feel like a massive missed opportunity. Yeah. If you're Duke right now, nobody's going to say this out loud, but if you're Duke right now, you know what you're saying? Dude, all we got to do is beat an 11 seed and we're in the Final Four. And by the way, Just remember this every time we get a bracket on Selection Sunday and people start talking about toughest pass and easiest pass and pass and pass and pass. You see Duke's? Duke is maybe about to go to the Final Four by beating Vermont, James Madison, a Houston team without its best player, and an 11 seed that finished 9-11 in his conference. That's Duke's path to the Final Four. Yep. So, like, if you don't get this done, man, John Shire might coach another 30 years and never have a path like that back to the Final Four. So if he doesn't get it, it's going to feel like a real missed opportunity. On the other hand, if you're NC State, obviously you're an underdog for a reason, but you can say, listen, we did, hey, you guys are right. We were 17-14 heading into the ACC tournament. But since then, we have beaten Duke. We have beaten Virginia. We have beaten North Carolina. We have beaten Texas Tech. We have beaten Marquette. We have beaten Jack Golkey. All right?
Yeah.
Once you've done all that, you're not doubting yourself anymore. You're not looking across and going, man, it's cool that we're here, but what do we do now? You know what you say? We just beat these dudes. All we got to do is go beat them again. And they're not even as good as the team. We already beat them, and they're not as good. And I don't know if this is true. I'm just like, this is the type of stuff I'd be saying to myself if I were NC State. We already beat them a few weeks ago, and the team we beat 2 days ago is better than them anyway. So, like, what are we doing? Let's just go win the game. I think whoever loses this game is going to feel sick. I do think Duke wins it. If you want a prediction, I'll take Duke. Nothing would surprise me here. And I hope it's just an awesome game. For that region of the country, I hope it's just an awesome game.
Yeah. What's Kevin Keats say to his Wolfpack team if he's Dan Hurley? Does he go look at Sean Harrington's Twitter account and see what's up?
Yes. who could be tweeting like who's a blue devil who, what if Rashad Suleiman tweets something wild? That's what we need. We need a wild Rashad Suleiman tweet. Directed at NC State. That'd probably do it, wouldn't it?
Old Leitner tweet.
And how about Kevin Keats? And even Brad Brownell. I know this thing didn't go well for Clemson, but I can't wait. I can't wait till next October or November to do a hot seat list and just note it. I don't have to put Kevin Keats or Brad Brownell on it.
Yep.
Oh, it's going to be a fresh hot seat list, Strong John.
Amazing. And seriously, like 3 weeks ago, Kevin Keats very well was on his way to losing his job. And as we stand here Saturday night, we're 40 minutes away from Kevin Keats being in the Final Four. College basketball is wild.
Oh, dude, if Louisville would have just waited a week, they'd have probably tried to hire this guy.
Yeah.
Like he was Pat Kelsey turning down Louisville away from maybe getting a Louisville job if he wanted to. What a wild turn of events. NCAA tournament is crazy, isn't it?
Unbelievable.
What a wild deal. All right. I think we said enough. You think we said enough?
I think we said enough.
Strong Jaw, I appreciate you being here, buddy. I know during the season we get settled into a routine where it's me and Norlander, but in the postseason, just with the quantity of these episodes and the now CBS Sports Network component of it, and the fact that, you know, sometimes I'm in studio till 2:30 in the morning and Norlander's at games, you know, we need help. And you're here every time we need you to be. You're terrific every single time. So I thank you, and I love you, and I can't wait to talk to you again. And with that, I want to say shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M. Fatigle. He's the legend. Shouts to Huck and Larnell. And thank you guys once again for watching and listening to the Eye on College Basketball podcast. Going forward, the schedule is going to be, I think me and Norland are back on Sunday after the Final Four is set. We'll get you another fresh episode then. And then on Monday, 2:00 Eastern on CBS Sports Network, we'll be back on TV with the Eye on College Basketball podcast. So if you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple and Spotify. There's more of us than there are of them. That should be reflected in the comments. And like I said, we'll talk to you again real soon. Till then, take care.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better.
because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.